Medicine is one of the most difficult, fast-paced, yet rewarding paths you can take. You can set out on your own and navigate the student loans, the bureaucracies, and systems that define a typical medical career. Or you can apply for the U.S. Army's Health Professions Scholarship Program and launch yourself into a medical career like no other. Your tuition will be completely covered, and when you graduate med school, you'll learn from and work with some of the most elite minds in medicine. That's the Army difference. Learn more and apply today at goarmy.com/HPSP.
Warning. This show contains adult political themes and language. Liberals and little children should cover their ears.
Welcome to Liberty Never Sleeps, where negativity never sounded so good. Now here's your host, Thomas Purcell.
Good morning and welcome to Liberty Never Sleeps. Make sure to follow the show at our website at libertyneversleeps.com. Be sure to follow our Twitter feed at Real Liberty Tom and join us on Facebook at Real Liberty Never Sleeps on Facebook.com. Good morning. Tuesday morning and another day of hell and terror for Brett Kavanaugh. I watched some of these news stories in the last 24 hours, and I have to tell you, most of these stories would be considered libel or slanderous under the journalistic rules that I was trained under, and I think under most libel laws. If it wasn't for the fact that I would assume Brett Kavanaugh could be viewed as a public figure now, as a potential Supreme Court nominee, he would have lawsuit cases pretty much against most of the major media news sources. There are constantly stories coming out about some sort of accusation of what I would consider normal behavior for a 17-year-old. There's a story from the New York Times about an incident in a bar which he threw an ice cube at somebody. You know, they're nitpicking to the point where nobody is really paying attention to what Brett Kavanaugh stands for, his legal background, his legal career, his thoughts and his judgments in over the past 12 years as a federal judge, which is the only thing that should be considered other than absolute malfeasance in personal behavior, such as being a rapist or whatever. These are things that they're not talking about, and they don't want to talk about it. And I want to talk today to you for this hour about the politics of division, of our country basically tearing itself apart in what Jeff Flake describes as tribalism. And I want to get into some of this, and I think it's important that we do that, because Jeff Flake went to New Hampshire naturally, because I believe he's probably going to be on a presidential ticket, if not running for president or as an attempt to run as vice president. I think Mitt Romney is going to run again, believe it or not. I think Hillary Clinton's going to run again. It's going to be interesting what 2020 field looks like. He talked about tribalism. He talked about how it's dividing America, that we need to be more circumspect in what we are saying. Well, that's true. I wouldn't disagree with that, that when we dehumanize our opponent, when we declare them evil rather than just having a different opinion on how to run the country, that it is dehumanizing and that is dividing America. But Jeff Flake and the people who talk like him are worse for America. And I'm going to explain that, because the politics of division is exploited by the people who are always the ones who are claiming that they reach across the aisle. Nobody was more divisive than John McCain. Nobody was more divisive than Ted Kennedy. Some of the things that both men said were absolutely hateful. I remember John McCain standing on the Senate floor and saying that anybody that spoke out, like people who were members of the Tea Party, people who do things like I do, small microbloggers or radio shows or whatnot, are angry men in bathrobes. And he described the Tea Party, for instance, as hobbits fighting the dragons of Mordor. Jeff Flake probably is the most divisive man in America right now. When we could have gone to the Supreme Court Senate vote and voted in Brett Kavanaugh as a judge, he decided to prolong the agony of America, is what I describe it as, for another week, by saying, well, we're going to have the FBI look into the allegations, which are plainly turning out to be false. We're going to have him look into allegations for another week. Brett Kavanaugh has to watch newspapers, cartoons depicting his child, his wife, as something out of hell, claiming that he's a rapist, claiming that he has issues with anger, claiming that he has issues with alcohol. Another week of that, and it's tearing America apart. We didn't used to do that. We didn't. We always had divisions in politics. I mean, I can point to a number of things that Jefferson and Adams did that were plainly atrocious in their behavior toward each other. So that's nothing new. What's new is the claim that somehow America is getting worse. That is at the heart of this. The politics of division, the divide and conquer, are being used as a weapon. For instance, I'll give you an example. When we look at the Arizona election, and we're going to get into it a little bit, the idea that believing in something or standing behind your principles is divisive is now somehow viewed as an evil itself. That maintaining a code of ethics in what we believe in, how governance should be, is somehow divisive. Now, one of the things that they accuse Brett Kavanaugh of being is being a hard right-wing judge, right? That's the thing they said they're really opposed to, that he's going to repeal Roe versus Wade and whatnot. But what is a hard right-wing judge? A hard right-wing judge is a constitutional originalist. And what originalism is the idea that the Constitution itself is a set of laws and that we should maintain the idea of what the original intent was. In other words, when the Founding Fathers said you have the right to keep and bear arms, they meant it. They didn't mean muskets. They didn't mean some sort of wackadoodle idea about regulation as being government regulation. They meant that every American has the right to own and defend themselves with a handgun or other personal weapon of choice. And we've taken that and reinvented it to suit modern times. Now, this is taught in many colleges, universities, law schools. This is the thinking. And has been the thinking in most universities for the last 50 years. But what Anton Scalia and other constitutional originalists are maintaining is that is an error. So now when they come out and they say things like, no, Roe versus Wade was wrong because it was judicial activism, the Heller case, for instance, in the issue of gun rights, the original intent of freedom of speech and political donation, such as citizens of the United, now that's viewed as somehow extreme because for the last 50 years, most law professors have been teaching this idea of judicial activism as normal. So what happens is people try to exploit that. Instead of simply saying, well, I have a different view of the Constitution, they're saying now it's extreme, that it's not the accepted norm. In other words, they reinvent normal. They reinvent America as somehow this nice utopia where everybody gets along and people who view different things in different ways or with a different set of principles as somehow divisive. And that's what they're doing. They're exploiting divisiveness for their own political gain. And what they typically do is they say, well, I'll be the nice guy. Jeff Flake is notorious. I mean, he's the classic quintessential guy. I'm the nice guy. I'm going to come to you with the deal. I'm going to say, well, we'll have a week-long investigation by the FBI, but in the end, I'm just going to vote as a Republican always does. They're going to vote Brett Kavanaugh as a Supreme Court judge. But he is going to be a Supreme Court judge that's going to have an asterisk after his name because everyone is going to say, oh, he raped this girl, Dr. Ford. He's a drunk. He got anger issues. And so we're left with that. We're left with the legacy. And we have to live with that. And that is tearing the country apart. Back in the old days, when I was a kid, politicians didn't do that. They felt that destroying the country, was more of a problem than what the actual crime was. I'll give you a classic example. Richard Nixon. Richard Nixon felt that he was much maligned. He didn't feel that he committed any crime. When he learned that some operatives of his had done an illegal activity, he made the mistake of saying, well, we shouldn't allow the politics of this to divide the country, so I'm going to basically kind of cover it up. That's what really what his crime was. Not that he ordered the Watergate break-in, but that he tried to conceal it from the press and politics so that it wouldn't divide our country. And then when he was confronted with that, the actual articles of impeachment that they presented him with in the White House were absolutely ridiculous. Was that he manipulated the IRS, that he used the White House for political purposes. And when he was confronted with that, he simply resigned. And everyone felt that Richard Nixon was the most divisive. But you understand, it's the people that were calling for his resignation over a minor incident, which people did go to jail for, and the accused, people like G. Gordon Liddy and whatnot, did go to jail for it. They're the ones who are the divisive ones, just like Jeff Flake. Jeff Flake is the most divisive senator I've seen in 20 years, probably worse than McCain. Because why? Because he tried to make a deal. Because he tried to be fair. Because he tried to reach across the aisle. I have said this before. I've done entire shows on it. It's the guy who's in the middle that's the most problematic. It's not the divisive. Americans have been divisive since 1776. Hell, we were people that got thrown out of every other country to make America. But after all, what is the revolution about? What is the American Revolution about? It's about a people, colonists in America, English colonists, who stood up to their king and said, no, we feel we should run things on our own. We can do a better job. And who was the most divisive person in the revolution of 1776? It was Benedict Arnold. Benedict Arnold was supposedly a peacemaker. He said, no, we can go appeal to the king and we can reach out to him and we can get seats in the parliament and all of this would go away. And that's why he switched sides. That's why he changed allegiances, because he felt that the Americans were the most divisive. But in the end, who was the most divisive person? Was Benedict Arnold. And that's what I'm trying to explain to you today, that the people that are the moderates, they're the ones that are divisive. They're the ones who are trying to bring us across the aisle, instead of simply saying, no, I'm going to make the case that I believe in something and you're going to make the case believe in something and the American people decide. It's the guy that goes, oh no, we can compromise. We can reach across the aisle and we can change our principles. They're the most divisive. And in the end, they're the most tyrannical. And so I want to get a little bit into the details of that. I want to talk about, for instance, the Arizona Senate race, which is the entire country in a microcosm. And I'm going to explain how that works. Then I want to talk about some of the divisions in society, like racial injustice, how that's being used to divide us, and how misogynistic and misogynism is being used to divide us. And then a little bit on Kanye West at the end of the show, because what he said on the Saturday Night Live show, which was very interesting and very true, about thinking independently and thinking differently and not going with, as a friend said, going with the zeitgeist. And we have to talk about these things because America is coming apart, but not because we have different views. We've always had different views. It's because there are people trying to exploit that for their own political gain. Barack Obama was probably one of the best at it. He was a community activist. What does a community activist do? We'll get into it today. We'll be right back. Let's take a brief break. And then we'll get into some of these details. Let's start with the Arizona Senate race. Because it's such a perfect example of divide and conquer politics. We'll be right back. Gifts of all sizes help to ensure that Liberty Never Sleeps remains a relevant, vital resource across our nation. More than 70% of the funding for Liberty Never Sleeps comes from our listeners through the generosity of membership support by donating at patreon.com. Join our Insiders Club for $10 a month and gain access to private shows and editorial columns. Go to libertyneversleeps.com and click on the Donate Now button at the top of the page or on the button at our Facebook site. Thank you for your continued support. And we're back. You know, the Arizona Senate race is absolutely ridiculous. Now, you all know the story of it for those of you who live here in Arizona. We had a fairly far right person running against Jeff Flake. It was for Jeff Flake's seat, this race. He's now resigning, stepping away from it, saying he's leaving the Senate seat that he's been holding for a number of years. He was running against somebody who was pro-Trump, fairly hard right, fairly conservative. There were a few things that I had differences on, as I said this before on the show, but it is not a big deal. It was a woman named Dr. Kelly Ward. Now, the establishment didn't like Kelly Ward. Kelly Ward is a blue-collar. I know she's a doctor, but it appeals to a blue-collar voter. She comes from a community out in the boondocks in Arizona, Lake Havasu. For those of you who liked Spring Break, you know of it. And she was running against Jeff Flake, and she was ginning up the popular vote against Jeff Flake. People were getting really disturbed by Jeff Flake. They wanted somebody pro-Trump Republican, and Jeff Flake was anything but a pro-Trump Republican, and he stood for amnesty. It was a very divisive issue here in this state. In fact, Jan Brewer made a career of it by who is a moderate Republican by any stretch of the imagination, but she was hard right on immigration. We have a problem here. We have an open border to our south. We have problems in our cities in Arizona. We have rampant illegal immigration problems on the border. And so Kelly Ward made that an issue. A number of issues came forth, and she is a little less than polished. I think she'd be the first to say that. She had made a number of statements. She had been on local radio stations. John McCain, she ran against. There was a number of divisive situations with her and McCain. And when Jeff Flake said, we looked at the polls, he realized he couldn't win. But instead of taking his case to the people of Arizona, he wrote this wackadoodle book, which was an abomination, basically an aborted version of Goldwater's conservatism. And he realized there was no way he could win. And he didn't want to go down as somebody who lost to somebody like Kelly Ward. He decided to step away from the race. This made the Republicans in Congress, the establishment, very nervous. They didn't like the idea that Kelly Ward might be the next senator from Arizona. And so they wanted to run a more moderate Republican instead of Jeff Flake. Jeff Flake said he wasn't going to run. He had other plans, which we've seen now. He's up in New Hampshire making speeches, which is the first campaign stop in a 2020 presidential run. A number of people are up there right now. So they decided to promote the idea of somebody else. They tried to get somebody. There were a number of phone calls made to a number of people, and Martha McSally answered the call of the Republican establishment. Martha McSally is a conservative. She's a Republican. But in fairness, she's not quite as far right as Kelly Ward was. But they felt Martha McSally could win in a Senate race, and Kelly Ward would be more problematic. And so they decided to push McSally into the Senate race. And still, McSally was not going to be ahead. And then all of a sudden, Joe Arpaio, another hard right candidate, suddenly appeared on the horizon. There were questions about his candidacy. And what happened was the vote divided three ways, with two of the hard right candidates getting about 30% of the vote and Martha McSally getting about 35% of the vote. If you total it up by the polls, it was clear that the Republican Party in Arizona wanted a hard right candidate because 60 to 70% of the vote went to Arpaio and Ward, and only 35 to 40% went for Martha McSally. But in the end, because of the politics of division, we ended up getting Martha McSally as the primary winner, even though the Republican majority wanted a hard right candidate. Some say that Arpaio was put in the race to deliberately divide the vote. There's some evidence for it, too. So now we have Martha McSally running against Kristen Sinema. Kristen Sinema is a hard left candidate. McSally's campaign has decided to focus on the negative. And she is falling behind in the polls. Because she's coming out with things that are obvious about Kristen Sinema. Kristen Sinema is a hard left communist. No question about it. But the problem is the Arizona voter knows that. And McSally is running a hard negative campaign, and it's turning off the voters. And more importantly, many Republicans who are upset at the fact that Arpaio and Ward did not get in the Senate race are saying they're going to sit home. And I think that's why the polls are also down. You know, you get lose a couple points to people sitting at home. You lose a couple points for the negative campaign that she's running. I rarely see a positive ad by McSally. It's always these public action groups, you know, with a negative campaign. Kristen Sinema took money from child molesters and stuff like that. I mean, these are things that are true accusations, by the way. But it tends to turn off the Arizona voter. It's obvious that the people running the campaign are running it from Washington. Because Washington will say, well, let's run a hard right. They don't understand the Arizona people. Arizona people, generally, by and large, are nice people. And they don't like negative campaign. Negative campaign has never been successful here in Arizona. In fact, John McCain and Jeff Flake always ran positive campaigns with only an occasional negative ad. Martha McSally's decided, basically, to run with the Washington, D.C. notion that the Arizona voter would be attracted by all this negative campaigning. They're not. And so she's slipping behind in the polls. And it's problematic that Kristen Sinema will win. But it's a microcosm. Because the Washington establishment, this is how they operate. They operate with the politics of division, just like Barack Obama did. That's what made Barack Obama and propelled him to the presidency. It was the politics of division. Getting people to fight with one another and then exploit that for their own gain. This is what Flake is doing in this deal-making and trying to eventually run for president and probably on a ticket with Mitt Romney, my guess. Maybe not. Who knows? That's my guess. What he's trying to do is exploit the politics of division. He knows everybody's upset about Brett Kavanaugh's constitution view of the Constitution, constitutional religionist. There are also people that are part of the Clinton campaign team that are promoting the idea that Brett Kavanaugh is a sexual predator, a drunk, an angry person. The media is out to get him, probably prodded by Team Clinton. They turned him over to Team FBI. And what did Jeff Flake do? He tried to exploit the politics division, knowing full well that everybody's divisive about this subject. Oh, I'll be the peacemaker. And I'll make this deal where we have a small FBI investigation in return. If it comes up negative, you'll vote for Brett Kavanaugh. Brett Kavanaugh had the votes. At the conclusion of the Judiciary Committee meeting, they were going to vote for yes. It was only that last-minute accusation by Feinstein and her crew and the media with Dr. Ford's allegation, completely unsubstantiated without evidence, that held this whole thing up. And he decided to exploit that so he could go to the American public in New Hampshire and say, but see, I'm the moderate person. He made a speech yesterday. Tribalism is destroying America. I'm the solution to the problem. They create the problem. And then they claim that they're the solution. This is what Barack Obama did. He created the problem of racial injustice. There has always been racism in America. Always. It's like this situation with the Arizona Senate. There's a reason why Martha McSally is running for president. It's because the establishment is trying to exploit the politics of division. They exploited it to get her the nomination, and now we're going to try and exploit it and get her to the Senate, except it's not going to work. It never works. Unless you're somebody who is a particularly magnetic personality, like Barack Obama was. But what it does is give you political power. That it's very good for. Because everyone now, in most cases, when there's politics and division, they gravitate toward the peacemaker. Oh, listen, you know, Jeff Flake's a good guy. You know, he's really trying to solve the problem. Jeff Flake created the problem. He's now dragged out this country for a week and another week of accusations, acrimony, anger, hatred, bitterness, and it's dividing people further along these lines of constitutional originalism. That's what really this is about. To be honest, it's also about Hillary Clinton, about her turning the media dogs, which I firmly believe that Team Clinton is in control of, or at least the idea of Team Clinton. And they're going after Brett Kavanaugh because of the obvious reason he's connected with the Brett Starr investigation, or the Ken Starr investigation, excuse me, which he mentioned in his speech. But I want to talk also about this idea of racial injustice, because Barack Obama exploited it when he was president of the United States to maintain. He won the second election. I don't know if he won the first about it, because everyone was in love with the idea of a black man becoming president. But he certainly exploited it in the second and propelled him to the second presidency, to re-election. Let's talk about that. I think Mitt Romney learned from it. You know, I think the Republican Party learned from it. It was John McCain that sent that dossier, the Steele dossier, over to the FBI that got the whole thing going with the Russian scandal and Donald Trump were non-scandal. And I think he learned from it too. He learned that the best way to get at your enemies is to start fighting with each other. I mean, by turning that Steele dossier over to the FBI, he knew full well he was turning it over to Clinton and Team Clinton, I should say. And then what they would do with it, and they would run with it because they would use it as a political weapon against Donald Trump. We'll be right back. Is there racism in America? I believe there is. Well, there's no doubt in my mind. There's lots of KKK members. Lots of extreme people on both sides of the aisle. There was a woman just yesterday who was a professor, talks about castrating men and feeding them to pigs, which we'll talk about the misogynistic culture in America. No doubt that there's racism. The question is whether there's institutional racism or is it a widespread problem? You know, you could have a racist society. In other words, you have a percentage of people that are racist for whatever reason. There are black racists, there are white racists, there are Asian racists. Well, it's not limited to one race, despite what you've been told. But as an institution, as it being a problem in society, I'm not so sure about that. Blacks, Asians, Hispanics own companies or CEOs of companies, are in sports, coaches of teams, leaders in society. In fact, one became president, Barack Obama. So the idea that there's institutional racism, that it's a problem, that blacks or minorities are somehow held down in society because of the inherent racism of other races, that is something that I find hard to believe. But by taking a kernel of a problem, the fact that there is an element of racism in society, and will always be, despite what you've been told, there will always be an element of racism. And then exploiting it for political gain. Let's say you're running for mayor of a town. And somebody gets shot. A black man gets shot by a white cop. And you want to make mayor. And you don't have the issues. You don't have the ideas behind you. In other words, your narrative of what you bring to the table doesn't exist. You don't have any experience. You have nothing to talk about. The current mayor that you're running against is running things fairly well. has experience that you don't have? How do you win in a case like that? Well, you take a case like this, let's say a white cop shooting a black, and then you claim that it's racism. And then you claim that the current mayor, who is basically in charge of the police department and the police chief, is in fact a racist themselves. You haven't done anything about this. This is a case where it's a clear example that there's racism. And then you can run on that issue, that one issue. And then you can gin people up because people don't like racists. No one likes a racist. I haven't met anyone other than a racist themselves, a member of a KKK, for instance, or a Nazi. I haven't met anyone that approves of racism. I don't know anybody that admits to racism, even if they are a racist. So you have that issue where if you accuse somebody of it, and then you use a case like that as an example, it's very easy to get people to dislike the person you're running against. Everyone says, well, yeah, why hasn't he done anything? Why have the... And then, of course, you give other examples of other cases, which may or may not be racist. In fact, many times we've seen in the Black Lives Matter movement, in many cases, there have been false allegations. There have been accusations which are unfounded with evidence. The case against Brett Kavanaugh does not have any evidence. It's simply based on whether you believe her or not. Nobody talks about evidence in any of these cases. So what you do is you play on that and you gain political power. There are people that do this just as a living. Al Sharpton is a classic example. He goes from town to town in cases where a black man gets injustice or is shot or is found guilty in a case where he shouldn't be. And then he gets paid to make speeches. Believe it or not, people pay him to do that. Oh, would you come to our town? There's a case where a black man was arrested on this crime and it's not right. And then he hears the case and then he goes, okay, my fee is $275,000 or $300,000, whatever he gets. And then he goes and makes a speech. He's exploiting it for money. There are other people that exploit it for power. Such as I said, you run for mayor and you say, well, this case is a case where the current mayor is not running things right because of racism. Barack Obama played that card big time. One of the things that he talked about many times was the inherent racism of police departments in the United States. Oh, there's a problem with racism. There's a problem with untrained police officers who allow their racial prejudices. And this idea of white privilege is now expanding in the Democratic Party and largely to the benefit of people like Barack Obama. Saying, well, you're privileged as a white person. You get by in society and you get things in society that other people don't. And yet, constantly we see from people on the left wing them claiming to be a racial heritage in order to get things. Classic example is Pocahontas. Elizabeth Warren, she claimed she was a Native American, and she did so to her benefit. But they exploit this. They exploit it for political gain and power gain. As I said, Al Sharpton, classic example of exploiting it for personal gain. There are people out there that do it for aggrandizement. Take a look at the reverend. Do you remember reverend who was Barack Obama's reverend in the church that he went to? He was constantly, he made the famous speech where America's chickens are coming home to roost. The 9/11 was our fault, if you remember this case. What was he doing? He was getting to people to say, yeah, that's right. Yeah, I'm oppressed in society. And yeah, you're right, and it's not my fault. It's because of racism. It's a boogeyman to create. Adolf Hitler did it to great success. He blamed the Jews and his perception of them causing the problems for Germany's economic woes. There was some evidence that the reparations placed on the German Empire after World War I were a problem and were hurting the German economy, and those were largely controlled by the banking industry. And of course, in Germany at that time, the banking industry had a lot of Jewish people in it, so it was easy to blame them. It was easy to point that figure, and he exploited it to the point where he became dictator of Germany, or as they called him, Chancellor. The division always exists in society, and particularly America. We are divided by race. We are divided by sex. We are divided by political ideology. It's never stopped America from becoming the greatest nation in the world. Jefferson and Adams, classic example. These were two of our founding fathers, had a complete different idea about how government should be, the role of and placement of government in society. Same with Alexander Hamilton, another idea. Many, very many different ideas. Never stopped the founding fathers from coming together and writing the Constitution, but it wasn't because of bipartisanship. They didn't change their ideas. They didn't say, oh, that's a problem. They didn't exploit that. Instead, they say, well, I have a different idea. And they went to the American people and they said, well, what do you think? And what do you think? And what does the state of Maryland think? What does the state of Pennsylvania think? And in the end, they came to the decision that they felt was best, but they didn't compromise on their principles. There were people that didn't want the Second Amendment in the Constitution. There were people that had the great compromise, as we know. They had a problem with the Southern governors. People who ran the Southern colonies wanted slavery, and the people in the Northern colonies said, no, 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 this is an anti-idea of freedom, and the idea of our Constitution is that all men are equal. Doesn't matter what their color is. And so they came to a compromise. But what was the compromise? They basically conceded the point that there was going to be slavery in America. They didn't compromise on their principles. They compromised on a point of law. People like Jeff Flake want to compromise our principles. The idea that we should have borders. The idea that we should defend our borders. The idea that illegal immigration is wrong. Jeff Flake wants to compromise on that. People like him want to compromise on that. Barack Obama. He exploits that for his own personal gain. That's how he became president. There was no way Barack Obama was going to win re-election. So what he did was gin up support of his base. In other words, the base that voted for Barack Obama, by saying that America is a racist country and I'm going to fix it. I'm going to correct it. I'm going to correct all of these people in jail that were in jail unjustly. I'm going to correct it because police departments have become too onerous in our society. We're becoming a police state against black people. Not that he did anything when he became president. There were people that were still sitting in jail. It took Donald Trump to do it. That were in jail for no reason, no good reason. But it took somebody like Donald Trump, which we're going to talk about at the end of the show with Kanye West. Donald Trump doesn't exploit the differences in our society for political gain. He simply solves it. Oh, we have a problem with this. All right, I'll fix it. This is the problem in America. It's not the fact that we're divided. It's not the fact that people say boo or, you know, whatever on social media. That's not a problem. That's never been a problem. America's always been able to come together and solve its problems. What the problem is people exploiting it for their own political gain and tearing the country apart. That's the problem. Let's talk about the division along sexes next. We'll be right back.
Lullabies, look in your eyes, run around the same old town. Doesn't mean that much to mean that much to you.
Gifts of all sizes help to ensure that Liberty Never Sleeps remains a relevant, vital resource across our nation. More than 70% of the funding for Liberty Never Sleeps comes from our listeners through the generosity of membership support by donating at patreon.com. Join our Insiders Club for $10 a month and gain access to private shows and editorial columns. Go to libertyneversleeps.com and click on the Donate Now button at the top of the page or on the button at our Facebook site. Thank you for your continued support.
Tomorrow's clouds, a little piece of you, a little piece in me will die.
What is misogynism? Misogynism states, or basically the concept is, that women are inferior to men and then men therefore must act superior and behave in a certain way. Okay, that's clearly misogynist. All people are created equal, men and women. Our Constitution now says so. You have no right to tell somebody that they shouldn't vote because they're a woman. We have the Title 10 laws, which say you can't discriminate, even though California just passed a law that says you can, saying that you have to put a woman on a board of directors because she's a woman, essentially. I've read the law. It's a fine point that says, well, if two people are up for a position on the board of directors, and one is a man and one woman, if they're equal, then you have to pick the woman. That's going to divide our society even further. There have always been divisions between men and women. That's nothing new. What's new is that our leaders, as I said, are trying to divide us further by exploiting for their own political gain. What's the gain to Governor Jerry Brown? Well, he gets more political power. People think that he's going to solve the problem of not enough board of directors that are women. That's not going to solve the problem. That's going to make it worse. It's going to create a divisive work environment. And in the end, many corporations who are incorporated in California will simply leave. That's the real issue. That's the real problem that faces California. It's Jerry Brown. The problem is Jerry Brown, not the divisions in society. He didn't pay much attention to the Title X laws in California, apparently, which say you can't discriminate based on sex, because that's discrimination. First of all, let's dispel the myth that you could have two applicants for a job that are equally qualified and that you have to decide based on sex. That's a myth. I have never had two candidates that are identical for a job. Never. In the hundreds of job interviews I've done, a hundred of interviews I did as a recruiter, maybe thousands, I have never had two people that are exactly the same that I can't decide which one to pick. There's always a deciding factor. Somebody has a better interview, somebody has a little extensive record, or some of the things that they did in college or in their papers or in their work experience are fit better my company or the company that I'm recruiting for. There's always differences. It's never about sex. I never said on an application, nor have anybody I've ever known said on an application, well, that person is a man, so I'm going to pick them instead. They're exploiting that. That's not a problem. But it is now. It is now that Jerry Brown passes a law or signs a law which clearly discriminates, because now what's going to happen? You're going to have a bunch of people apply for a board of directors positions and then claim what? They were discriminated against because they're a woman. Well, you didn't give me the job because I'm a woman. Well, no, I didn't give you a position on the board of directors because A, B, C, D, and your record and this and this. It doesn't matter. Let's all sit in a courtroom and decide it. Look at the cases of women against men in sexual harassment, sexual discrimination. There's no doubt, and I have said many times that it exists. But it's plain truth as a certain percentage that are simply doing it to make money. Look at this woman, what's her face, who claims that he was running a gang rape ring. Brett Kavanaugh was running a gang rape ring. She was on NBC News the other night and making all kinds of wild accusations. And you can see with her facial tics and mannerisms, she isn't quite right. Her story keeps changing. There are inconsistencies in her story. Everybody's talking about it. Even NBC says, well, something ain't right. The FBI, in fact, is not even going to consider her and the Avenatti's client as a legitimate case against Brett Kavanaugh. They're not even going to talk to her. It's so ridiculous. She has a long track record of suing companies. She sued the company I worked for, New York Life. There's another situation where she was countersued by the company that she was suing for making false allegations. I'm not going to say it's widespread, but there's certainly a percentage of it. So people are exploiting that for their own personal gain. What did Hillary Clinton run on? The war on women. We talked about it yesterday. That there's somehow a war on women. And that the Republican Party is the party of misogynism. Meanwhile, they've got professors teaching in our university that's saying that, well, yes, men, white men are the problem and we need to castrate them and feed them to pigs. What could be more divisive than saying something like that? What could be more advantageous to her as a feminist, as a man-hating feminist, than saying something like that? Because everyone says, oh, yeah, you're right. See, we have this problem. And people like her, people like this professor are going to fix it. They're going to teach us. You know, the past couple days, I haven't gotten much sleep. Do you know what I've been doing? Not that anybody is doing this. Have you been reading? I know I have. I've been reading Dr. Ford's thesis papers, Dr. Ford's books. Did you know she's a well-published professor on psychiatry? Except some of her psychiatric conclusions are really unusual. Nobody's been talking about this. She is an expert, or what is considered an expert, on biostatistics. What she does is look at statistics. How many men did this? How many women did that? How many people are gay? How many people are not gay? How many people are gay but not are claiming they're not gay, and that sort of thing. All kinds of statistics. I've been reading through volumes of this stuff. I've been staying up all night. I haven't gotten much sleep. And I can tell you, as an expert in this sort of thing, because I've studied this, I can tell you that her conclusions are wildly politicized. She takes statistics and basically turns them on the head to suit a political agenda in almost all of her papers. And she's considered an expert on a number of things, including statistics on sexual deviation and misogynism and, interestingly enough, on rape. I noticed also her mentors in college, people that were her guiding mentor in a thesis. When you write a thesis, you also have to have somebody you refer to as somebody that helps you guide you. It's your doctorate mentor. Her mentors were experts on what? Hypnotherapy in sexual deviant behavior. In other words, women that would have repressed memories and go into hypnosis and discover that. Now, those theories in psychiatry and psychology have been wildly discontinued. They've been discredited. They've been completely debunked. The idea that you can put somebody under hypnosis and discover things in their memory that they can't recall. I find that interesting. Now, I don't want to attack Dr. Ford, but it's clear to me that a certain political agenda is being exploited for gain. In Dr. Ford's case, she is now an accepted professor in psychiatry because it fit in with the agenda. It fit in with the idea that men somehow were misogynistic or that men are the problem. What was the original feminist movement about? The original, the burning of the bra situation. What was it about? What drove it? Well, in the 60s, women were subservient to men in some ways. They were considered housewives only. They weren't allowed in the workplace or they were discouraged from it. And so there was a revolution of sorts. Even after they got the vote in the 1920s, it changed. It changed into a culture where we need to do something about the situation of not being truly equals. The idea of the feminist movement was that women should be treated as exactly equal to men. Equal in pay, equal in treatment, equal under the law. The Constitution itself, the concept of it, is that there's equal protection under the law. Each person is equal. It doesn't matter if you're man, doesn't matter if you're woman, doesn't matter if you're white, black, Hispanic, it doesn't matter. What matters is that you're all treated equally, that we should be a colorblind society and we should also be a genderblind society. But it changed, didn't it? The Gloria Steinems changed that movement. It didn't become about equality. It became about hating men. Men are the problem. Men are the issue, mostly white male. It's now culminated in a movement where women don't even want to sleep with men anymore. There is a swing in our culture toward a more gender fluid idea of the sexes. That men are just not being men. It was strange this morning. Just this morning, I was just going through little videos that people send me on Facebook. And there was a funny video. It was funny. About a guy taking wax You know, we've all seen the movie 40-Year-Old Virgin. This was another case of a wife taking a wax strip and shoving on a man's hairy bottom and legs and stuff and ripping it off. There seems to be a movement that men don't even want to be men anymore. No real man pulls his hair off. I don't give a rat's ass. But manhood, masculinity is hair on your body. I'm proud of the hair I carry. I ain't going to shave it off for anybody. Now, I know that's going to come under some kind of, I'm a real man and I shave my hair. I don't give a rat's ass what, but something ain't right with somebody who takes his hair off his body. It's an idea that somehow that you'll be more attractive. And where did that idea come from? It came from media. It came from advertising. Do you remember the ad where a guy takes his leg and he starts shaving it to show his daughter how to shave her legs? I mean, no man that I know does this, okay? And they're changing the idea of what it is to be masculine. Well, a man can be friendly with his feminine side. Bullshit. I'm old-fashioned. Like I said, I like two sexes. That's it. Two. Man and female. I think society works best like that. But I'm not going to exploit it for my own political gain or my own personal gain. That's what they're doing. That's what the feminist movement does. Oh, you're the problem. You need to wear a dress. You need to shave your legs. You need to take all that hair off your body because, oh, that's gross. Or what it originally was, I don't have to take the hair off my body in order to be more attractive. I'm not going to shave my legs. I'm not going to take the hair off my underarms. I'm not going to behave in the typical feminine manner. A lot of women who've become lesbians won't wear makeup, for instance, and make themselves attractive to other lesbians, I would imagine, by acting more like men. That's where the transgender movement came from as a thing. And there are transgenders in our society. There have been transgenders for many years. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is it became a thing as women became more manlike and men became more womanlike. Wearing the man bun, shaving their hair off, looking like women, thin, wavy. I don't know how many vegan men that I've met. They would be in a hurricane, they'd blow away. We've changed the idea of what it is to be masculine. Oh, being masculine is being in touch with your feminine side. Not being afraid to cry is what it began to. It's nonsense. It's bullshit. They're just trying to sell you something. They're just trying to separate us further by somehow saying we're all the same. By saying that a man should be a woman and a woman should be a man. That's somehow bringing the people. No, it doesn't. That divides us even further. Where it began the show. And I want to talk just a little bit about what Kanye West said on Saturday Night Live and what was edited out. And how we're going to bring this all home. We'll be right back. You know, it's funny. I've dated liberal women my whole life. I don't know why. I've dated conservative women. I've dated liberal women. For some reason, I tend to gravitate toward liberal. And maybe because it was when I was a kid, all my aunts were liberal. You know, somehow they say your development as a human being is shaped by the people that are around you. My earliest experience with babysitters and my aunts and stuff, they were all, you know, hippie children of the 60s. They all wore big hats and sunglasses. You remember the look of the 1960s and early 70s? I should say I was more in the 1970s. Was the bell bottoms and the big hats. That was really the rage. And all my aunts wore it and certainly my babysitter did, you know. And so now that's what I'm attracted to, interestingly enough, not to divulge too much personal discussion about it, but I've always been attracted to, as I said, liberal women. But that doesn't mean that I'm a liberal myself. That doesn't mean I also think that they're evil either. It's just they have different ideas about running the country, ones that I don't think are healthy in some cases. But it's okay to say that. It's okay to be different. It's okay to have a different viewpoint. Kanye West is coming under a lot of heat for being a Trump supporter. He was on Saturday Night Live the other night talking about his viewpoints, and he had on a Make America Great hat again. He was on the show, and of course some of the audience was booing. But something very important that he said, and it was edited out in the later shows that were non-live. He said, "I have the strength to be free. This is my statement. I'm going to put on my Superman cape for a second." He puts on the hat. "I have the right to think differently. This is really critical. I don't think people realize the importance of it. You have the right to think differently, right or left." And one of the ways that these people that are trying to bring us together, like Jeff Flake, the people who reach across the aisle, the people who want us all, the men and women, to be the same, the people that do this are the problem. Because they're telling you that you can't be free enough to make a decision on your own on who to support. A lot of commentators have been saying in the last couple days since the Saturday Night Live episode, since Conway, well, he's had issues with mental health. The professor who wanted to show the film on the Facebook site, who wanted to castrate white men, said, well, you know, they're mentally ill. What is Nazism? They were sterilizing. The earliest versions of Nazism in concentration camps were that they would sterilize people because they were mentally ill. They were mentally deficient because they didn't believe in Nazism, because they were Jewish, because they were something other than a white Aryan male. This is something that they're very good at. What did the communists, the Stalinists, how did they control people in Soviet Russia when Stalinism was clearly not working? They told people who aren't believing that you're politically incorrect in your viewpoints, that you're mentally ill. And so therefore, we need to sterilize you and lock you up in a labor camp and prevent you from harming society. What are they always saying about liberal? Well, you're out to destroy society. As John McCain famously said, yeah, you all you people in angry bathrobes, all of you tribalists are out to destroy America. You're destroying the environment. You're going to get everybody killed with this attitude about North Korea. You're the problem because you're mentally ill. What are they saying about Donald Trump? You're mentally ill. And Kanye West pointed out, and he says, no, don't you understand? This is my Superman cape. I have the freedom because I believe something that you don't. They're actually viewing. I was reading, like as I said, Dr. Ford's papers, and what she had also described in her papers as thinking differently, doing things differently, or behaving in a certain way, or traditional male and female roles, was somehow mental illness. That it was a form of something called operational opposition disorder, defiant opposition disorder, or oppositional defiant disorder. That you're mentally ill because you think differently. That why aren't you thinking the way everybody else is thinking? Why are you thinking the world is round instead of flat, Galileo? That's mental illness. This has been going on for 2,000 years, this idea. We're going to lock you up for your own protection. That's why Kanye West, what he said was so important. It's not that he's a Trump supporter or not. It's not relevant. What's relevant is that he is strong enough to say, I believe in something even when everyone else who's black says that you should vote Democrat. Oh, you're black, you should vote Democrat. You should vote for Barack Obama because you're black. You should vote for Hillary Clinton because you're a woman. Why don't you think like us? All of you women must be mentally ill if you don't support our side of the argument. Why, that's not in your best interest. Don't you realize we're trying to protect you by allowing you to have abortions? That's why Kanye West was on. That's why they edited it out. They don't want people to think like that. They don't want people to think on their own, think for themselves. The entire concept of the American Revolution and the separation of us from England was what? That Americans can govern themselves, that the people can. It was a revolutionary idea at the time. 1787, the world was run by kings who were considered nobility, and because of their blood and their heritage, were better than anyone else. What is the viewpoint of people like Jeff Flake, people on the middle of the aisle? Well, you know, cooler and wiser heads can think better than you can. All of you people are tribalists, and tribalists are not are a problem. No, the problem are people like Jeff Flake. The problem are people who say, you can't have ideas that are different than what everybody else thinks. That's why I say bipartisanship is tyranny. Because they're thinking that we all get along, we all have the same ideas, we all should just do what you say. Follow orders, Schweinhund. Papers, please. This is the story of the Nazi Empire. That's where it goes, folks. It's not that I'm calling Jeff Flake Nazi or John McCain a Nazi any more than I would call a Barack Obama one. It's just that that's where it goes. 50 years from now, 100 years from now, 150 years from now. That's where the mentality goes. Where did Nazism come? Where did the idea that somehow you can purge America's, the world's problems through bioengineering, or basically sterilizing those that are mentally incompetent. Where did it come from? It came from progressive America in the 1920s. If you read some of the papers, that's where America was going. Except the German people and Adolf Hitler took it to a new level. They went further, and when America saw the result of that, we largely abandoned that ideology in 1945 when we marched into those camps and freed all those people. And we saw what horror, it was largely abandoned in the United States. Up until 1945, in the advent of Nazism, you look at some of the Supreme Court rulings. They were horrifying in what they said. No, several generations of morons is enough. Famous quote from a Supreme Court judge. We're going to allow sterilization of human beings in the United States. Yes, it happened here in the United States. We largely abandoned it when we saw the end result. See, that's the problem. People don't see the end result of basically going with the flow and why it's a problem. But that's why Kanye West was demonstrating so vividly the fact that he was free person. He was a truly free person by putting on that MAGA hat. Because now it didn't matter whether, even if he had been a left winger who had put on a Hillary Clinton hat when the audience was right wing. The fact that he did something that was unique to him, that I'm going to be strong enough to think differently than the crowd. That's why it was so revolutionary. That's why it was edited out, because they don't want you to know that. That thinking differently is the problem. That's the problem. Thinking differently. That's why Jeff Flake. People that think differently. People that don't have the normal ideas of what everybody got. Those are the problem. That's the real divisiveness in society. Those are the people are really the problem, or Jeff Flake? Anyway, we're out of time. I hope you enjoyed today's show. I think we ran a little over. It's a little rainy out. I think I'm going to go back to bed and sleep back in and enjoy the rain. This time of year, I love this time of year because the temperatures drop. It goes from like 100 degrees down to 70 degrees. It's wonderful. And then it stays cool weather for the rest of the fall and through the winter. I think we're going to have a long, cold winter here in Arizona, and I'm looking forward to it for a change. We didn't get a winter last year. On a personal note, you know, there is a human being here behind the microphone. I don't talk about, I don't know, softer issues too much. Maybe I should. Maybe I should talk about it more, you know, because a lot of my friends have said to me, he said, you know, you're a really funny guy. Most of my stuff on Facebook and Twitter is humorous. And it doesn't come across in the show. It's unfortunate, but it's the nature of what we do here and the nature of the show. I'm looking forward to the fall. I don't know if you are. For those of you, we don't get fall colors here in Arizona. You know, it's desert, right? The fall colors mean the cactus gets a little wetter. That's about it. Anyway, time to go. We'll be back tomorrow. I think tomorrow we're going to talk about Trump and trade and tariffs and what is really going on with NAFTA and the shift that we're seeing and why it's to America's future and betterment. I think we'll talk about that tomorrow. Take care, folks. Have a good one.